Former New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani is testifying today at the Zacharias Moussaoui trial. He's recounting what he saw on September 11th when the World Trade Center was hit by the planes. Jurors are deciding whether Moussaoui should die for conspiring with the 9/11 hijackers. They're also expected to hear audio tape from the cockpit of United Flight 93 and testimony from family members of the victims.
It's unclear whether the tape from United Flight 93 will be made public beyond today's airing in the courtroom, but last week CIA documents released in the penalty phase of the Moussaoui trial were made public for the first time. Statements made by the mastermind of the 9/11 attack, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, offer new insight into the inner workings of al-Qaeda. Steve Call is author of the book Ghost Wars, The Secret History of the CIA, Afghanistan, and Bin Laden from the Soviet Invasion to September 10th, 2001, and he joins us now. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Madeline. Glad to be here.
Now, these pages were a written account of statements that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed made under interrogation. What is new? What did you learn from these pages?
Well, some of this had been described at secondhand before by the 9/11 Commission, but essentially he provided during his interrogations a detailed account of his interactions with Osama bin Laden and other al-Qaeda leaders as he developed and then field-managed the 9/11 plot. And in particular, he talked about targeting. For instance, it seems clear now that the Flight 93 that crashed in Pennsylvania because of the actions of the passengers aboard was headed for the Capitol, not the White House. That had been a source of some confusion. I have to say one issue with these Khalid Sheikh Mohammed statements is that there has been an acknowledgement by the Bush administration that they used aggressive interrogation methods against Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. The Bush administration argues that these methods stop short of a legal definition of torture, but they apparently did include methods such as waterboarding, which involves simulated drowning techniques to persuade the subject of an interrogation that their life may be in jeopardy and they should talk. At the end of that period, Mohammed had given his interrogators extensive statements, but later it turned out that many of those statements were lies, and he, under more congenial circumstances, revised his original accounts. And it's not clear whether the documents submitted in the trial represent this later generation of statements or the first generation.
Now, in this document, he talks about all sorts of things. First of all, he talks about, as you say, the list of targets during the 9/11 attacks. He also talks about a second wave of attacks. And can you talk about that?
This whole plot began with a brainchild of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. And let's remember, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is the uncle of Ramzi Youssef, who carried out the first bombing attack on the World Trade Center in 1993. After Ramzi Youssef was arrested in 1995, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed remained free, and he continued to think big about these kinds of terrorist strikes. But he had no particular relationship with Osama bin Laden at that time. He sought bin Laden out in 97 and proposed a very grand plot to hijack perhaps a dozen or more planes in the United States, attack a variety of targets, not only those that were actually struck on 9/11, but others on the West Coast, nuclear power plants. And in Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's original formula, he was going to take the last plane down to the ground, land it, and make all sorts of demands on bin Laden's behalf. Bin Laden listened to this plan, and he said, that's too much. But later, he invited Mohammed back and approved a scaled-down version of the original grand vision. Mohammed continued to harbor dreams of the original plan, and so there was a second wave, according to him, that was based on his original outline. Now, whether bin Laden ever really imagined carrying out that second wave isn't clear, but there does seem to be evidence in the case of Moussaoui that at least a few backup or follow-on hijackers were organized by Mohammed to consider carrying out additional strikes after September 11th.
One of them being Moussaoui.
That's Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's version. And this is a very interesting sort of mystery that's raised by the penalty phase of Moussaoui's trial. Moussaoui at times has claimed that he was meant to participate in the September 11th attacks, but the purpose of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's testimony apparently has been to indicate that, no, we never really saw him as a 9/11 hijacker. We saw him as a follow-on hijacker.
And in fact, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in this testimony says he didn't really like Moussaoui. He didn't trust him. And he complained that Moussaoui disobeyed him. And he was overruled by bin Laden.
In fact, it's easy to imagine why Khalid Sheikh Mohammed might have reached that conclusion about Moussaoui, having witnessed Moussaoui's behavior in the courtroom. Not only is he disruptive and erratic in his outbursts and his statements, but he's very independent-minded, and he seems to have a vision of himself as a kind of autonomous jihadist.
Well, given the totality of all these statements, do they at all challenge or undermine or contradict the notions we had previously about how al-Qaeda is structured and how it operates?
No, I don't think so. I think that, first of all, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's account of how al-Qaeda operates at the inside is consistent with other accounts. It was a corporate organization that did have clear management, strong management from bin Laden. It had management committees. In fact, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's account of his role is that of a middle manager, in that he's trying to manage up, he's trying to manage his boss, keep bin Laden off of his back, keep bin Laden from messing around with what he thinks of as the integrity of the 9/11 plot. And at the same time, he's trying to keep the morale of his subordinates up in the field by giving them the space and the trust that he thinks they need to carry out the job successfully. And he's got temperamental colleagues in both directions, both his supervisor and his field operatives challenge him and give him trouble from time to time, at least by his telling. Now, we have to take all of this with a grain of salt. We can imagine Khalid Sheikh Mohammed with a lot of time on his hands in captivity, telling the story again and again to his fascinated interrogators, and increasingly he is the center of the narrative. And unfortunately, the only really full narrative we have of the 9/11 plot is that in which Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is the storyteller and the central character. In a perfect world, we would have Osama bin Laden's version of this narrative and that of Ayman al-Zawahiri, and then we would have, I think, a fuller picture of how this plot was conceived and executed.
Steve Call is author of the book Ghost Wars, The Secret History of the CIA, Afghanistan, and Bin Laden from the Soviet Invasion to September 10th, 2001. And he's also a staff writer for The New Yorker magazine. Steve Call, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, madam.
Later in the program, the Gospel of Judas revealed.